Wait. Before we start, just want to make sure we're clear here. While this podcast talks about sobriety, mental health, and addiction, it is not meant to replace professional medical advice. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety.
I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're ex-sisters-in-law, brought together in marriage and bonded through our sobriety journey.
Join us as we talk sobriety, addiction, and everything in between. You're in for quite a ride. And our Substack is buzzing with amazing content, from creative mocktail recipes to insightful courses and reflective exercises. There is something for everyone. Don't miss out. It's a great way to add some extra joy and depth to your journey. Check it out. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety. Today, we're helping you kick off the new year with a topic we're so excited about, which is planning your best sober year yet. So we're going to get into goal setting, finding balance, and rewriting those old, tired narratives that hold us back.
Yes, we're going to be talking about creating a life you love and being intentional with a fresh start the new year gives us. So whether you're brand new to sobriety or years into your journey, this conversation will have something for you.
We will ask some other reflective, thought-provoking questions to spark ideas, and we encourage you guys to think about how you would answer them. So grab a notebook or just settle in and let's get to it. So Kathleen, let's start with goal setting. What's one specific goal you're setting for yourself this year, and does it tie into your sobriety?
So honestly, this year, I am really focusing on my physical and mental health. And the last few years have really been all about learning and growing and building my practice, which has been amazing. And I've really reached those goals. But lately, that I have to prioritize myself in a deeper way. So I really want to get healthier and stronger physically and, and also and mentally. So losing my dad a few months ago and dealing with some of my own health stuff has been a real wake-up call for me. And, you know, sobriety taught me so much about showing up for myself. And it feels like this is the next step in that journey. So making sure I'm taking care of the whole picture, that I can feel my best and keep showing up for other people. How do you make sure your goals are realistic but still exciting enough to challenge yourself?
Yeah, I think being realistic is so important. And for me, that means setting one goal at a time. And even if that goal is really small. And so I break it up also into like short-term and long-term goals, but they should all kind of be small for me to be able to get to them. So okay, every year, I think you know this, I'm like, I'm going to stretch more is always my New Year's resolution. And it's too vague, right?
Like, yeah.
And I know like the goal is, yeah, I want to be able to like touch my toes, but I think I really need to have a plan. So actually, since we were thinking about doing this episode, I have a plan now, which is, so I'm going to do three specific stretches and I am not going to turn the TV on until I've done these stretches. Or if I turn the TV on, I got to be doing these stretches. So that's sort of like how I'm going to get it done, is I'm going to tie it to that. So I know when I hit the power button and I'm going to Netflix, these stretches need to be done. And so I did look up the three stretches I'm doing and I'm ready to go.
That's so good. Yeah, I think that's the piece too, right? Is like, okay, what specifically are you going to do? How are you going to do it? You're using some nice habit stacking there.
Yeah.
You're like habit stacking of watching TV. And so you're going to add that to it. And for myself with my health and wellness journey, that seems pretty broad and big. But yeah, I have signed up for a course looking at my metabolic health. And then also I've just signed up for 3 sessions with a personal trainer, not to have ongoing personal training, but I want a plan where I can measure where I'm starting from and that where I want to get to. So that is to help me set my goals.
I love that. Yeah, I think sometimes you do have to invest, right, in these things. And that can also be like frustrating too. You're like, where am I going to find the money for a personal trainer?
For sure.
Yeah. So, okay, I've set so many goals in the past that haven't worked out. What are some that you've set and that you've learned from them not working out?
Weight loss. Like that is, yeah, I mean, that's a whole other topic. And that had been so interesting when I think back because, you know, in my 20s, when I was hot as shit, like so hot, that was still my goal. What? Seriously?
So crazy.
Like, so crazy. And it's never worked for me. And I've, you know, it's taken a long time for me to learn from that, but I have. And I really used to focus on the number of the scale. And honestly, that just backfired on me. I would deprive myself, and then swing the other direction, like lots of restriction and then lots of binging. And, you know, chasing a number just feels empty. I didn't have a deeper why behind it. And if I did, the why was pretty shallow, actually.
Yeah.
And so what I've realized is the more I care about my strengths, my physical strength, my mental strength, and longevity now, I really just want to feel good in my body, to know that I'm taking care of it in a way that supports me, like short-term and long-term. So it's not about shrinking myself. It's actually about building myself up physically and mentally. And that shift in mindset and focus has really made a difference. You said you have your goal for stretching.
Yeah.
How do you plan to measure your progress?
Yeah. What are the KPIs, right?
Like, KPI.
Yeah. And so that's actually it for me, right? I'm a little too KPI oriented. Like, I'm the quantifiable goals. So I think this year, shockingly, I am going to measure progress on how my body feels. And so, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's new to me. So I'm not going to look at, that my muscles coming in and my tricep. I'm really going to look at, you know, how it feels. And so, yeah, one example is like, I noticed when I was doing, I do Pilates, and when I'm doing it, like my back's hurting a little bit. Like, and I was talking to my boyfriend and he was like, you know, your posture is terrible. And it is. My posture is terrible. I know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I think you should just work on your postures. You can do a thin back brace. And it's like, yeah, that's important rather than doing 45 minutes of Pilates, right? Is that it feels good when I'm doing it. If it doesn't feel good, it's not right. Right. And so, yeah, I'm just going to focus. And I've done this with relationships even too, right? It's like, something doesn't feel right, but I'll just keep going and think that, I'm just going to keep going. Let's look at the other indicators of success, right? And
yeah,
so,
for sure.
Yeah, like, how does this person make me feel right now, especially when you're thinking about relationships? And so that's my plan this year. The thing is, it's a little vague, but maybe as time goes on, I will find ways to measure how I'm feeling. Maybe there's like a mental component, or maybe... Yeah, so maybe I'll think about how to make it a little bit more specific. Yeah, so that is my plan this year. But speaking of systems, so how do you break down a big, daunting goal into a smaller one with a little more manageable steps?
So I am very intentional about goal setting, and I wasn't always, definitely not most of my life. I would say I've only become really focused and intentional about goal setting probably in the last 5 years, 5 or 6 years. And I actually have, I'm holding it up so you won't be able to see it if you're listening, but I have this planner that I got off of Amazon.
It's really cool.
Yeah, I do one every year. And in it, I set my goals for my year. And it also has like an amazing section for your dreams, or like, and it kind of splits it up by areas of your life. So I set my goals for the year, my big goal, and then I break it down to quarterly goals.
Right.
And it sort of helps you do that. It walks you through like, okay, so if this is your goal, what do you need to do to get there? And then it helps you do the steps. And so I break those yearly goals into quarterly goal. And then from there, every month, I kind of reassess my big goals, my quarterly goals, and I'm like, okay, what do I need to do on a monthly basis? And then I also set weekly goals. So like but I want to say it seems like a big, heavy lift, but it's not. Like, I get so excited. I've already purchased my book for 2025. I use it. I like review everything on Sunday nights. I look at my week ahead. At the end of the month, I review like the month that has just passed, the month ahead. I actually really credit this book and this habit that I now have, this practice, this system of really helping me achieve what I've achieved in the last few years. And so I adjust when needed. Like, things will come up and happen in your life, and then you just adjust. And did I meet all of my goals that I set for the year? I didn't. But I also know why I didn't. I also know what had to be pushed aside to do something else. But I also did reach many of my goals. And I think, like, it's just a mindset shift. It really keeps me focused. And I love doing it.
I love that you love doing it, because I think sometimes when we get those books at the beginning of the year, like, we look at them and we're just like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And it gives us this dread. Oh, I haven't done this or I haven't done that. But yeah, I think making it enjoyable is like a really big deal.
I love it. So what's your favorite way to celebrate those small wins along the way?
Yeah, I love celebrating small things, and I'm pretty easy. So making a themed meal or mocktails and popcorn in bed. And so buying yourself something cute, especially with sobriety, when you're tracking how much you're saving from not drinking, it's fun to buy something that gives you some pleasure with that money. And so, yeah, I think it's so important to celebrate small stuff. Like, this is dumb, but like, so my boyfriend, I love saying that now, we had sushi for the first time together yesterday. And so we went to that place.
Oh, the best restaurant.
Yes.
So good.
But we got takeout. And before, we were in this like kitchen store. And I was like, oh, let's get chopsticks and little like soy sauce bowls, because we're having sushi for the first time. And so, yeah, I mean, what was it, like $10, $11? And now we have like a memory. And so I think it's important to celebrate small things and also to reward yourself, right? So that wasn't necessarily a reward situation, but reward yourself.
So what have you learned in the past about goal setting?
So every year for, honestly, as long as I can remember, probably in my 20s, my goal was to moderate my drinking and get healthy, but again, without a real plan. And so I think I assumed that if my goal was just to be healthier, then it would just happen, right? And I didn't realize that you really need a mindset shift, but that's only one part of it. So you're faced with a million decisions, right, throughout the day that shape your habits. And so what's being healthier, right? Working out, because that takes a plan. Cooking healthy meals, that takes a plan. Taking the stairs instead of the elevator, less of a plan, right? And more of like an instantaneous decision. Ordering the healthier meal at a restaurant, more of an instant, you know, decision. And so, yeah, basically a week or two into each year, I would just be frustrated and overwhelmed. I'd have, you know, taken the stairs a couple of times. I would have, you know, ordered the healthier meal at a restaurant once. And then I would, you know, do a couple of yoga classes. And I think that because I expected to feel healthier right away, I would just get frustrated that, you know, wait, now I have to make all these other changes to feel healthy. And I would just give up. And I think a lot of people do that too. And so I think, you know, if I could do it again, if the goal is to figure out my drinking, let's not call it also like getting healthier, right? I think that was the main driver of me feeling unhealthy. And so I should have focused on the drinking and then maybe a year later, focus on like meal prepping and things like that, because just getting sober is a really big deal. And I think that, not that that's the reason I didn't, but I think part of it is that I didn't want to admit it was a problem. And so I just lumped it into getting healthier. But on its own, moderating or quitting drinking, that's a goal of the year. That is the goal of the year. So let's talk about balance, because we know it's easy.
I've seen you do it.
Overextend yourself. So what does balance mean to you in your sober life?
Well, for me, I actually think of balance more as harmony. So when I hear balance, I picture like this perfect 50-50 scale. Yeah. And that just doesn't feel realistic to me in my life. It just doesn't. I don't think from a day-to-day basis, I will be like, well, 50% is focused on one thing and 50%. Like, I just, for me, it doesn't work in my brain. So harmony, on the other hand, is more for me about prioritizing what matters most and then making space for those things while still taking care of my responsibilities that I can't necessarily like divest of.
Yeah.
So it's about setting really clear boundaries that I'm not overextending myself. And as you know, I have challenges with this.
Wow.
And some days one area of my life might need more attention, and that's okay because it has to shift depending on what's happening and what the priority is for that day. So harmony to me feels more flexible and intentional and grounded in what I value. And it's especially true in sobriety.
So I hear that, but a follow-up is, what is one area of your life that feels most out of balance right now? And what's your plan, your specific plan to address it?
So work is harmony for me.
Wow.
And this is hard for me because I am so grateful to have a thriving practice. I really, really consider my job a true privilege, and I love it. And I also love it. So it doesn't feel like work for me, but I also know that I'm working too much. And so I realized that while I love one-on-one coaching therapy and I love couples work, it also limits the number of people I can help. So in the new year, this is my plan. I'm planning to bring on a new therapist to join me in my practice. And I'm also working on creating some offerings that can reach more people. And there's definitely going to be some heavy lifting involved in both of those. So this is more of a long-term solution than a short-term solution. Short-term, it might look and feel the same. The goal is for me to keep serving my purpose and also carving out more space in my life to spend with my daughter, to spend doing the things I love. And I am finally taking a vacation for the first time in years. Like,
yeah.
Years. It's been 6 years since I took like a going somewhere warm vacation. And that feels like a huge step towards restoring some harmony in my life.
Are you going to be working on that vacation?
No, I have blocked my calendar and I'm not taking any clients for two weeks.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm not taking any clients for 2 weeks. I also I was saying to my daughter the other day, she's a big reader, as you know, and I was telling her I have not read a fiction book also probably in 6 years, because I've been so dedicated to my work.
Yeah.
And every book I read is nonfiction. And so I plan on also reading a fiction novel while I'm on vacation. So it's going to be really a vacation.
I can help you with that. I read like a fiction book every couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely help me with that. Like, I have no idea where to start. And I used to be so into reading. Like,
yeah,
I would just read and read and read and read. And I do still read a lot, but I'm reading journal articles and books on therapy and couples work and all that stuff. So I am really, really, really tuning out from work on my vacation.
I love that. You know what you could also do? You could read Trashy Magazine.
I used to love Trashy Magazine.
Yeah. Hit up a lot almost weekly. Yeah.
I really enjoy that. I know. I'm really, really excited. I'm really excited. So how about self-care? What's your non-negotiable when it comes to taking care of yourself?
So currently, look, I don't have kids or a husband, so I can usually fit these things in terms of time. But I also think self-care is you have to feel good enough about yourself to want to do it, right? Regardless of how much time you have, if you're feeling shitty about yourself, you're not going to feel like doing self-care. And so it's not always a time issue. But one thing I've learned this year, and you know, we've interviewed so many amazing guests, and it's really gotten me to think, and I really think now that sleep is non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. And so I'm somebody that can get away with less sleep. So I can sleep 4 hours and function the next day, but I notice that I'm making worse decisions, right? And so,
did you know your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? That's right. It's not just about your birth date. Your body could be older or younger than you think. That's where True Diagnostic comes in. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part, it's all done from the comfort of your own home. No prescriptions, no lab visits, just a simple test sent right to your door. By tracking your biological age, you can actually see how the changes you make, whether it's to your exercise, diet, or sleep, affect your health over time. It's about taking actionable steps to improve your well-being. Oh, and if you're wondering about high-profile people taking it seriously, Brian Johnson, the guy who's working on reversing aging, and I watched his documentary on Netflix, uses True Diagnostic to track his progress. Ready to find out your biological age? Right now, our listeners can get 20% off their entire order at truediagnostic.com by using the code CIS2025 at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, TRUDIAGNOSTIC.com. Just use the code SIS2025 to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today.
I think there's more and more studies coming out about how being sleep deprived has a lot of effects on our motor function and cognitive function, right? Like almost as much as drinking. And so I think that the sleep thing, because I noticed too, I'll make better decisions about food when I've
slept for sure
8 hours. Yeah, I'll make better decisions about working out. It's easier to skip a workout when you haven't slept, or it's easier to, you know, give up on things like that, or you can shift your focus. So, and for me also, especially with drinking, it's a big trigger for wanting to drink is if I am sleep deprived. And so, yeah, that's a big one for me. How do you create space for yourself when life is hectic? Do you have a go-to strategy?
Well, when my life gets hectic, my boundaries become non-negotiable. So I get really strict about protecting my time and energy. Sleep is such a big deal to me. Yeah. It is my absolute priority when things get and feel overwhelming. It's literally the foundation of everything for me. So I have to make sure I'm getting enough rest no matter what. Exercise is also another non-negotiable for me because it has such a huge impact on my mental health. Like even if it is 15 minutes of stretching, I really, really try to make it happen.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I'm the same. Sleep is really foundational for me. Movement doesn't really matter what movement it is. And then really clear boundaries. Those are the things that I have to have, especially when life gets chaotic. And it's interesting because when life gets chaotic, those things can be harder to maintain,
yeah,
but those are the things that you need to maintain, right?
For sure. I think sleep is sometimes one of the first things to go. But now too, we have so many options to help us track like the health parameters. And so I know how much I'm sleeping because of my Apple Watch, right? And so I love waking up and it says, you've hit your sleep goal. And same thing with your activity goal, you can set that. And I think now we need to use things to keep us on track and motivate us. I think why not use the technology that's out there, right?
For sure, for sure. Have you ever heard of the Oura Ring?
Yeah, yeah. People are freaking out about the Oura Ring.
I really think I've looked at it. It's not in my budget right now.
What's the difference between that and the, I just don't see the difference between that and the Apple Watch.
I think it also measures stress. I don't know. I have an old version of the Apple Watch. I love my Apple Watch, but I have clients that have the Oura Ring and they can really like see where stress was in their life. You know what I wish there was, and maybe there is, and I just don't know about it. That's entirely possible. I wish there was like a ring that monitored sleep, stress, movement, and glucose.
Oh, yeah. We're really into blood sugar. We talk about blood sugar all the time.
I do. And I didn't tell you, but as part of the metabolic program I'm doing, I get a continuous glucose monitor.
Really?
I do. Well,
oh, man. I want to get one too now. Yeah, we talk.
I know.
I'm all up in sugar spikes now.
Same. I am too. Like I had 60 grams of protein at breakfast this morning.
Oh, you know what I added? I was talking to my friends about my breakfast situation. I've told you too, like I eat granola and like yogurt and berries and stuff, but it's not high in protein. And I notice I get hungry. And so I added cottage cheese.
Oh, good. That's great.
Yeah, to my yogurt. And it really masks the taste of cottage cheese if you don't like it. And I don't hate it, but and it adds a decent amount of protein. So
you can also blend the cottage cheese and then the texture is the same basically as yogurt.
Okay. Yeah. So that's my thing. So do you have a time where you were having trouble finding balance and that you really realized that you needed to make some changes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember, so there's several in my life.
Yeah.
There is one that I actually was just talking to my partner about the other day, because when I was married and I had like another parent in the household, and actually for as long as I can remember, yoga has really been a big part of my life. And when I had another parent living in the household, even though my life was often chaotic with, again, work, I was devoted to a Saturday morning hot yoga class, 8 a.m. every single week. I went without fail. It was my time for self-care. It was like I was really strong. I was flexible. I like really kind of sweat out all these toxins. And it was really my time. And it was really the only time that I had. And it meant a lot to me. It meant a lot to me. And this is going to sort of sound like a first world problem. But when I became a full-time single mom, it hit me like a ton of bricks that I would no longer be able to do that class, because my daughter was really little at the time. Ooh. I would have to pay for a babysitter. I wasn't really sure about money at the time. Like it was, you know, pretty tight. And so I stopped going. And I remember the first Saturday that I didn't go, I cried because I didn't know how I was going to adjust my life. Like I felt like I was trapped in the home, partly because I became a full-time single mom, like, you know, 3 weeks after the first lock or before the first lockdown.
Yeah.
In where I live. And so I didn't know how I was going to get that movement anymore. And it was really hard on me. Like, I know I am very conscious and aware this is coming. I'm saying this from a place of privilege, and it does seem like a very much first world problem. But what it was about for me is I no longer had that space for myself. I no longer was able to move my body in a way that I knew that my body liked, like, and have community. So I really liked connecting with other people. So it wasn't just about the practice of yoga. It was about like going, connecting with other people, going to that space. And so I really worked around that. So I started teaching yoga. I mean, I had been teaching for a long time, but I started reteaching. And so I brought the community to me. So I taught every week. In order for me to teach, I knew I had to practice. And so I joined Peloton, like the app, not the, not the full bike thing, but the app. And I was really consistent with my practice every day. I practiced on my own. And so I just reframed what it was going to be.
Yeah.
Because I needed to be home for my daughter. And I actually ended up, you know, making really good friends through teaching yoga in my community. I also learned a lot from the daily practice I was doing. And what's interesting is recently I started going back to a yoga class on Sunday mornings now. And it is so amazing to go back. And I feel that sense of community again. I love the practice of going, but I was able to get through like the last six years being a single mom. And I made it work. You just make it work. So that's how I sort of found balance.
I think it's so important that shows you have to be flexible, right? So when it gets in the way of meeting one of your health goals, you have to adapt. You can't just kind of be like, oh, well, I guess I can't do that anymore. Look, you're going to get injuries, right? And you're just like, well, I guess I can't run anymore. No, you can't. But
You can just go for a walk.
Yeah. And I think a lot of us get like stuck, right? In that sort of, well, if I can't do this, then all is lost, right? And I think it's really important to adapt. And so, yeah, I think you have to really sit in that and figure out, okay, what can I do to make this situation better?
For sure. And, you know, what is so interesting too is about going back to these in-person classes. I'm probably the most grateful person there.
Lord.
I am so flipping grateful. I literally am smiling for the whole class because I know the sacrifice it has taken. And for me to be back in that space is huge.
Yeah.
I think, you know, what I talked about too is not only reframing, but changing the narrative, right? Like changing the narrative. And it's such a big thing in terms of shifting mindset. What one negative story you've been telling yourself around sobriety that you are ready to let go of?
Well, I think you know this too. Like, so, you know, I guess one of many reasons, but to me, a big reason my marriage broke up was because of my sobriety. I don't like to party anymore. I wanted to be with my young nieces more. I had really dorky hobbies, shockingly. And so I've been nervous about this. When dating and getting into new relationships, I'm always like, am I not fun enough? So I'll be out to dinner on a date. And I wonder if they're wondering why I can't just have a glass of wine. So dating brought up a lot of the insecurity about my sobriety. And so, I just found myself kind of replaying, you know, the things that my ex had said and then kind of like projecting them onto this other person, assuming that's exactly what they were thinking also.
It totally makes sense. And this is a narrative that you've had. So what is a positive narrative you can replace it with?
Yeah, I mean, I know this is going to sound a little cheesy, but someone who has a problem with my sobriety just isn't my person, right?
So
that's something I came to a while ago about a bunch of different things, not just my sobriety, but the person I end up with is not just going to tolerate me being sober, but they're going to celebrate it, right? And I know it sounds naive, but I really believe it. And so I have people I've met there, you know, when I tell them I'm sober, their reaction is, that's amazing, congratulations. And then other people, their reaction is, so you don't drink at all? And I remember I was talking to this one guy and I forgot. I usually try to mention I don't drink pretty early on in like chatting. And I made a joke about this area of Toronto that like used to be known to like get drugs. And he said, oh, I didn't know that side of you. And I said, I responded with, actually, just as an aside, I don't drink either, right? And so I never heard from him again. And I remember, though, that was the first time I was like, I don't give a shit. That's not my person. If you have a problem with that, what are we going to have in common, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I feel like I've started to work on that, like, negative self-talk that, like, my sobriety is something I shouldn't be ashamed of, right? And I think that I had spent a lot of years being ashamed of it. So it was this kind of like negative, you know, self-talk. So yeah, what do you think is a good strategy for flipping that negative self-talk, flipping the script for that?
Well, there's a couple of things I use. And so one of my strategies is something that I've learned in acceptance and commitment therapy, which we have talked about at length before on this podcast.
Girl.
It's a concept called diffusion, and it's been a game changer for me. So when I have a negative thought that pops up, instead of trying to push it away or hooking onto it, I just say to myself, like, oh, here's that whatever story again. Because usually the negative self-talk will have a theme to it. So, you know, we talked about this in the past. I'll have some inadequate mom stories. And so I'll be like, oh, there's that inadequate mom story again.
Yeah.
And it helps me create some distance from the thought. It just doesn't feel as overwhelming for me. It just separates myself from the thought. I love using Byron Katie's four questions to challenge negative thoughts. And so her four questions are, is it true? Can I absolutely know that it's true? How do I react when I believe that thought? And who would I be without that thought?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I use those a lot. And so those questions not only help me kind of question the thought, but also reflect on how it's affecting me and explore who I might be if I let that go. So both of these practices allow me to step back and then get curious and approach my thoughts with a bit more compassion and clarity.
Wow. I love that. Who would I be without the thought? I love that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If you think
Here's
about
the
it.
Hint. Most of the time, happier, right?
Oh,
most of the
God.
Time, more peaceful. Most of the time. But it's really important to ask the question.
Yeah. I mean, for me, too, more confident.
Yeah.
Get up. Oh, my God. That was big. Because I know we've done the is the story true thing. I've done the first couple of questions, but I haven't done the last two. I usually get stuck. And so, I think, how do I react when I believe that thought? And so in the first two, my therapist has said, that's the Cliff Notes version, right?
Yeah.
So if there's a kernel of truth in there, right? Actually, sometimes there's a kernel. But it is the Cliff Notes version. And so, now I know I need to go to the next two questions.
Yeah, for sure. But I will, for our listeners, those questions are really explored in Byron Katie's book, Loving What Is. And I think the subtitle of that is Loving What Is, Four Questions That Can Change Your Life. So I highly recommend that book. A book probably 15 years ago, and it really changed me.
Okay, I love that. Okay, now that you've blown our minds, is there a mantra, an affirmation that really resonates with you right now?
So the one that I'm using now is I create harmony in my life by focusing on what matters.
Well,
yeah. Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one.
And
it's a good one. It's what matters to me, right? What truly matters to me, not what matters to, this other person or this other person, but I create harmony in my life by focusing on what matters to me.
Oh my God, yeah. And harmony, do we think, is harmony equated to balance in some way?
So, sure. That's harmony is my version of balance, because to me, balance feels rigid, but harmony feels flexible and fluid. That's just me.
Yeah.
So you could say I create balance in my life by focusing on what truly matters. And then for me, I use the word harmony.
Love. What's another piece of advice we can give about letting go of those old narratives?
So I really think there's a lot of room for self-compassion here, because, we can't go back and change our past selves. We can't. We can just really learn from our past selves. And I think having compassion for that person that you were in the past really will help you let go of those narratives. We are different people. We know different things. So I think having a lot of self-compassion for, who that person was and what they were going through at the time can help us let go of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally does.
This has been a really informative, and I love this episode, actually. What resonated with you the most? I think I know, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think we know too, what you just said about, who would I be without these thoughts? And it's not even... What that really means is that's who I actually am, right? I could reach my full potential without these negative thoughts, right? And so that's huge. And so I have this issue about feeling I don't deserve this, right? And so... those thoughts, I think, are really detrimental to me. I don't deserve to be happier. I don't deserve to be successful because. And so, that resonated with me. What resonated with you?
One of the things you said really resonated with me, and that was that self-care, you have to feel good enough about yourself to take care of yourself. And I think that was an important thing for me to recognize, because... You do have to feel good enough about yourself to actually even want to take care of yourself. And if you aren't doing self-care, if you're not feeling good about yourself, is there work you need to do around your self-esteem, around your confidence, around your worth, that maybe takes priority? Maybe that is your self-care right now.
For sure. Yeah, I noticed if I'm having a bad day I don't feel like working out. But that's part of my self-care. And so when you're not doing well, it's harder, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's harder to take care of yourself. But I feel super excited about the year ahead. I'm going to look up that weirdo journal on Amazon. And yeah, it's funny. I love notebooks, but I find that I'll have like four different notebooks.
This is comprehensive. Man, it is good. It is. I will send you a link and maybe you want to put it in the show notes too. It's really good.
Well, yeah. I'm excited. I hope for everyone listening, these questions spark some ideas and inspiration, and you can take them and journal about them or pop them over.
Having your best year isn't about perfection. So it's important to remember that. It's about progress and intention.
Yeah. And thanks for being with us on this journey this year. And we will see you next time.
This was Sisters in Sobriety.
Thank you for listening and being with us today.
If you want to learn more about sobriety and meet your community, find us at sistersinsobriety.substack.com.
Are you a sister in sobriety? Then reach out on social media. We'd love to hear from you.
If you're feeling generous, leave us 5 stars and a review and follow us wherever you listen.
You'll never miss an episode. Until next time.